Good morning, everyone, and happy Thursday, and welcome to another episode of I Take Bravo Very Seriously with me, your host, Dana. We have quite a bit to get into today. There's a lot of news, a lot of recaps, not so much on the podcast side. There wasn't that much yesterday being Wednesday. That's usually a big podcast day. I think maybe everyone is sort of having Vanderpump fatigue, and so a lot of our regular podcasts from the Vanderpump crew and the Valley crew aren't really about Vanderpump right now, but that's okay. We still have quite a bit to get into. There's always a lot going on in the Bravo sphere, so we might as well get into it. So let's start with the news of the week. So as you guys will recall, Michelle Sani Lally, I should start trying to remember her or pronouncing her maiden name properly, because as we all know, she is now separated from the Valley, and from Jesse Lally, and Michelle and Jesse are from the Valley. So even though the show is airing right now, we know that they are currently separated. So Michelle last week displayed just sort of like a man's hand in one of her stories, and I was like, wait, is she trying to drop that she's dating someone? And then she's been doing a lot of AMAs, as I'm sure a lot of you guys saw, and so somebody asked her if she was dating anyone, and she said, yes, someone special, but I'd like to keep our little secret for now. So of course, us sleuths, you know, did our thing and found it immediately. His name is Aaron Nosler, and he is a financial advisor, and she looks really happy. It doesn't look like he has kids, but it looks like he mentors kids, which, oh my gosh, like, what a sweet guy. And if you look back at pictures of him from like a couple years ago, they're liked by Jenna Willis and Logan Noe. So I think a lot of people in their friend group like already know him possibly. And like, I don't know, there's something about her in the show where I wasn't sure if it was just that she's bland, or maybe she was just getting used to the camera, or she's just quiet, but you just don't see a lot of personality from her, I guess. But when you look at the pictures of her and this guy, Aaron, she's smiling ear to ear. You can see true happiness in her eyes, and it's something that I feel like we haven't seen from her yet on the show. So after that was sort of announced, because people were spreading that everywhere, then Jesse posted a story of him and a girl and then like two other people, and he's leaning in towards the girl. Now, I could not find out who she is. I tried to figure it out and I couldn't, but I wonder if he was like trying to like one-up her, because like once her new relationship was outed, now he feels like he needs to do it. It's like, do the Lallys come to play? Like, are they just trying to fight with each other to be like, ooh, who can display their new relationship first? Now, I'm not sure if that's what he was doing, but you know, it really seemed that way. Then we had some insane stuff going on with Jax, Brittany, and their publicist Lori. So last week, Thursday, Friday, Jax Taylor, Tom Sandoval, and Tom Schwartz were in Montreal, Canada at a club called Pangea. So they were doing a couple nights of like a club appearance where they were, yeah, so it was like a club appearance. And I think they were also like, you were also able to like book them to come sit at your dinner table and like chat with you or something like that. So their publicist, Lori Krebs, she has been with them for a long time. She's very close with Jax, very close with Brittany. And people were had speculations about Jax and Lori previously, because Jax and Tom Schwartz went to the same club back in February, Pangea, with Lori as well. And Lori actually lives in Montreal, but she represents Jax, Brittany, a lot of the Bachelor people like Hannah Godwin, people like that. So people were speculating back in February that something was going on between Jax and Lori, and this was before Jax and Brittany had officially announced their separation, because Jax and Lori had posted like a really close photo together, but like Brittany didn't think anything of it. She knows that they're very close. She's very close with Lori. Lori is married. It was nothing. But then this time, so last week when the three guys were there together, people were going off convinced that something was going on with Jax and Lori again, because Brittany, while they were there, unfollowed Jax and unfollowed Lori. And like, what? Like, why would she unfollow them when, again, she is very close with Lori too? And she was just with Lori at Watch What Happens Live 2 weeks ago. So it's wild. Then Jax blocks Brittany. So people are like losing it. He ends up restricting his comments. Lori's restricting her comments. And I don't know, nothing else really came of it. Because I live in Canada, I sort of tried to look into it. I didn't have any mutual friends with Lori. I couldn't really figure anything out, but she is married with two twin sons and lives in Montreal. But there was also like another blind item that was on Reddit that a couple days prior, so they went to Montreal April 18th, April 19th, but I think the day prior, so maybe the 17th, only Jax was in Toronto and he was spotted at a pizza place, I think, with Lori, and people say that they saw him go into the bathroom with her. and have sex. But obviously nobody could actually see him have sex with anybody, so I don't know why people are making that allegation. But I'm just, like, thinking this is absolutely wild. Like, I feel like whenever I don't believe something, it turns out to be true. So maybe I'll eat my words, but this just seems so crazy to me. But we haven't heard an update. We haven't heard anything since. So I wonder what's going to be going on there. We have an opening date for Something About Her. It's on May 22nd, so finally. I think a lot of people are really happy to finally hear that. I personally don't care when it opens. I never really did. They'll open it when they open it. I was really never too worried about it. Kyle Chan was on Kristen Doty and Luke Broderick's podcast, The Balancing Act, last week. And I do want to speak on this a little bit because it was actually a pretty juicy interview. He said quite a bit, and a lot of people, I think, were sort of waiting to hear from him. He, you know, obviously he knew about the affair between Tom and Rachel. His point was basically he told Tom that it wasn't okay, he needed to stop, but he didn't feel like he needed to get involved any further than that, because it was, you know, not his business, not his relationship, and he, you know, as much as he would have loved to be Team Ariana, he felt like it wasn't prior, it wasn't his business to get involved, and after the fact, he just wanted to make sure that Tom was safe, and he had brought up the whole guns in the house thing again. He had also mentioned that the party that Tom, and Rachel went to, that was Kyle's party, that was prior to the Something About Her tasting, where I guess, like, Kyle and Rachel were hanging out, that wasn't, like, a secret thing where Kyle had only, like, invited them so that they could, like, you know, rendezvous and have that relationship. He said he had invited everybody. And then with respect to Rachel's lawsuit, he had something very specific he wanted to say. So I'm actually going to play that clip for you guys now.
Raquel?
Yeah.
Rachel now. There's something that I really wanted to say. I feel like I've heard her podcast recently, here and there.
Same.
And there's a couple of things that I don't agree with. And I wanted to have a moment to talk about it. I feel like she, it's obviously saying that she's the victim of all. But I feel like this is how I see it. Rachel and Tom, I feel like they actively cheated on Ariana for 7 months.
Yes.
They were both guilty as fuck.
Yes.
So it annoys me. It feels like to me, it was like two people decided to rob a bank. And now one of them just go, I wanted to out the other person, so I'll get a less sentence. That's not how it works. That's really not how it works. If you decided to go to a rehab to think about what you have done, then I think you might need to go to another one because this one's not working.
100%. No,
I'm serious.
I know. I'm sorry I laughed. Yeah. No, I agree with you. I'm giggling because I'm uncomfortable, but I agree with you.
I don't like to bash
people.
Because then
she does. Rachel went rogue and now she's like double downing on
and suing Ariana. Can I tell you this? This is not going to find you peace because here's what I'm going to tell you. My advice to you. Because if you decided to sue Ariana, let's just say you win. You get a couple $100 in your bank. It's not going to last you. You get like $300,000 or whatsoever amount that you're going to get.
Yeah.
You are not going to have a good life. The reason why I'm telling you this, because that money is going to be gone so quickly. And then you realize you find yourself in a spot that none of your friends in the future that you meet along the way, it's going to trust you. Because you're that person who's going to, the mistress suing the wife, it doesn't make any sense. The karma is going to bite your ass and you're already in so much trouble that you finally right now, I feel like a year later, everybody's in the recovering mode.
Yeah.
What she's doing now, it's not healing for herself. It's not healing for Ariana. It's not healing for any audience. It's just not a healing process. So her lawyer, her therapist, her parents are not doing a good job. I'm sorry.
So I thought that was really interesting, and you could see that there was a lot of emotion behind it. And if you listen to the whole episode, even Luke and Kristen get quite emotional when they talk about the impact of how Scandoval affected everybody, quite frankly. But what I thought was really interesting is how he didn't mention that Rachel shouldn't be suing Tom, right? And because I feel like nobody can really argue that, and I totally understand what he's saying about Ariana. But it's just interesting that he's the one who's friends with Tom, and he's not, you know, here saying suing Tom won't bring you happiness. He doesn't say a word about that. With respect to Joe, he had quite a few comments as well, because he was around Tom Schwartz and Joe, and he was like, you know, they were never in a relationship. She was aware of that. And he kind of implied that there was issues with her and lying. So I'm actually going to play you a quick clip from the podcast about that.
At single night, and she said that they were talking about both wearing red bracelet, which means they're not available. Green is available. And yellow, it's whatever. And I think that it's a lie because I asked Schwartz, I'm like, hey, that is so strange because I didn't even know about the bracelet until I get there. I didn't even know that there was a red, green, and yellow wristband until Sandoval knew about it.
Right.
So all we knew was Tom Sandoval arranged this and saying, hey, let's meet at Skybar. That's all we know. So for her to say that him and Schwartz talk about it. So I asked Schwartz, I'm like, how did you?
Joe said, yeah. Oh, we talked about it before we went in the Uber. And Schwartz said, I'm going to wear a red one.
Yeah. So I asked Schwartz and he's like, no, we didn't talk about any of these. I didn't even know that there's wristband going on.
Right.
So for her to imagine these things in her head and like say out to make Schwartz look bad, saying that he's leading her on, I don't think that's cool. Because maybe at the beginning, he has lead her on a little bit. And then they
we
made
all
it
know
really,
that. Even Schwartz has admitted, like in the beginning,
he wasn't sure. Yeah, and he wasn't ready for a relationship. So he thought he made it clear that I'm not sure where this is going, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you know how he is. He just wanted to
be
nice. He just
wants to please everyone.
Yeah, he's not the type that would say, no, I don't want to do this. He'll
he doesn't want to hurt anyone's feelings. Yeah. Yeah. But this particular night, this thing that Girl Joe said in her interview by Tom Schwartz said, we're going to wear a red bracelet, blah, blah, blah. That's bullshit.
Yeah, that was not
it's not true.
Correct. It's not true. And the craziest thing is Tom already went on a date with what's the girl with the red hair?
His girlfriend?
Tori.
Tori.
Yeah, he already went on. They already talked about it. They already said that they are very clear at that point. I think Joe unfollowed me after she watched the episode because I was like, Joe, stop touching his hair. He's not going to get any girls.
Oh my God. It was so uncomfortable.
Yeah, she was touching his hair for like 15 minutes or something.
Yeah.
So then I'm like,
what was the idea? That's what I'm guessing. I don't know for sure, but from the girls I've dated, if they got their hands on you, they're claiming you. Like, this is like, you're my person. You
well,
know, like
because she did
that's what I would
his
do
hair.
Anyway.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
I'm not saying that's what she did, but that's 100% what I would
that's
do.
Yeah, not an uncommon
but
way to kind of claim
crazy
your man.
Because I spoke with Tom. I talked to Tom a lot. So I would ask him, hey, what's your status with Joe? And then he'll be like, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. So he will always tell me the truth because he knows, Schwartz know how I talk. Yeah. So he would like tell me straight up, you know, this is how I feel. But then the only reason why he pulled back, it was because of all these random lies. Mm-hmm. She just have a lot of like random lies. He won't say it, but I'm going to have to say it. I know Joe is going to hate me, but Joe, I do not hate you because I honestly think you're a really nice girl. People people misunderstood you, but I'm going to give you a little advice that you didn't ask. Like if you didn't make these random lies, I think you guys might still have something going on, even though he's not like mentally ready at that time. But then I think the deal breaker was all of these random lies that you made.
Yeah.
So I just
she
don't
said,
understand.
We're 100% dating. We're basically together. He said, I love you. Yeah, which I think Tom said like, oh, we have love for each other. Like, I love you. The same way I tell Tom Schwartz I love him.
You just told
the
me you love.
Okay. That was really interesting because initially when I had heard Joe on Rachel's podcast that she was like, Schwartz and I were dating. We had said, I love you and this and that. And I was like, oh my God. Like I misunderstood, but you know, redoing the whole, no, Schwartz totally let her on. He was doing the thing that men do where they tell us all these things that would make us think we're in a relationship with them and then we're not. And I'm like, he was so unfair to her. But then I listened to this and I'm like, okay, wait a minute. It does seem like there's all of these little things that she's just not picking up on. Well, sorry, not little things. It seems like he was pretty clear with her. And yeah, he did lead her on for a period of time, but there are all of these other things where Kyle is like, no, she was fully, fully aware. And there was something else that he mentioned as well that I thought was really interesting. In the podcast, he said that last week when Schwartz and Sandy's had a watch party, Joe showed up fully knowing that Schwartz was going to be there with Sophia and Sandoval was going to be there with Victoria. And she and Schwartz are not in a speaking place. Schwartz said that on Nick Vile's podcast last week. So, you know, it was kind of scary. Kyle said that she just kind of showed up on her own knowing that, you know, Sophia and Victoria were going to be there. So it was super weird. And then, you know, on the Vile Files last week, Schwartz did say, you know, he had pulled back from Joe for a reason that he didn't want to get into. And it was something that he didn't even discuss with her because he knew it would lead to a confrontation. And it's clear now what that is. Like Kyle is saying, there was just like all of these little lies and it just wasn't going to work for Schwartz. Yeah. So then last week, Joe then decided to do a 1 hour long live. And so she's sitting there with her friend and she's answering all these questions. And to be honest with you guys, like a lot of people found it really entertaining. It made me so uncomfortable. I didn't watch most of it. It's very clear that she's having some sort of manic episode and that she's not quite well. I'm going to play you guys about a 4 minute clip of it. My friend Vanderpod Recaps, who I'm sure you guys all follow, put this together from the 1 hour live. So this is about 4 minutes so you can get a sense of what her life was about.
Did I suck off Schwartz? Okay, well, they were in a relationship.
Yeah, of course I did. What the fuck is wrong? He was really good at having sex. I don't know why Katie didn't like his dick. He was great. Oh, God.
Can't. Why did Kyle Chan say you're a liar? Don't know. No clue. You. Oh, did you hear Kyle? No, I did not. You're perfect for Tom.
Yeah, probably. Triggers, get your...
No, I think Katie actually literally has kind of gotten to a place where she's like, oh, Joe isn't the bad person. Or like, I could, yeah, like at the reunion, it was like, she was like, she apologized. It was like the sweetest thing. But I'm not friends with her. I'm just saying that like, Schwartz, one big thing happened that made him... We don't know what that one big thing was. We don't know. But I'm also going to let you guys all in on a little secret. Let him go. Let him date. Let him be. I don't want to be, you know, like, it's we're broken up. It is what it is. Do you think Schwartz is my other half? Yes, I do. But I think it's going to take some time.
Yeah, you have said that for a long time.
Yeah, I have. And I think that him and I are just kind of like a...
Well, it's like in due time.
In due time. Are you and Katie good now? We've never, Katie and I have never been friends or anything. I have nothing against Katie. I literally, like, and you know this, like, she was duped just the same way as, you know, I was. So, like, sure. We do not need to hate on Katie. Everyone chill out.
Yeah.
Would you ever be friends with Kristen again? Nope.
Hard no.
No, I don't think I'm ever going to get back together, and maybe in the future, but I'm not really sure. I have met Sophia. She was so sweet. We did like a handshake, and it was like, hi, nice to meet you. Da, 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 da. And then, she seems great. Has Kristen, no, Kristen has not apologized. And you know that. Ugh. Wait one second. I want to show you my Christian. Oh, yes. Sent DM me. Katie might be jealous, but, like, obviously I'm jealous of her eyebrows. So, like, it's like a
she
thing.
She does have good eyebrows.
She's got the best eyebrows. I mean, look at my face. I'm like, meh. You know, okay. I mean, a little bit like, oh, wait, do you think Schwartz led you on? Yes, 100%. Joe, are you bi by any chance? I'm not bi. I'm strictly dickly. I love a dick.
Is that weird to say that?
No.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm not. I know. I kind of come off as, like, a little bit lesbian-like, but...
No, I don't think
I don't do. Like the Grateful Dead. I do like Lala so much. Are you going to do Lala's podcast? I don't think that she's asked me to do it.
No, I don't think so.
I don't either. I think.
Would you do it though?
Absolutely.
Yeah, she's a sweet girl.
She's a sweet girl.
What you've told me.
Yes, yes. And like she was the one that gave me so much grace and she didn't have to give me grace. So like that was, yeah. I love these earrings too. They're actually from Tom Schwartz. It's kind of crazy. How often do you talk to Schwartz? Right now, not really a lot because, you know, like, what do? You don't want to talk to your ex about, like,
especially when you have a girlfriend.
Yeah,
it's
no. Like
messy.
Yeah, like, we want him to go to Coachella and have fun and, like, enjoy his, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want him to be, like, I don't want him to,
Well, also, they're in the process of a breakup, which.
Yeah.
Exactly. Takes a while,
yeah, and I also like don't want to obviously infiltrate like myself into a relationship that, you know, he's in a new one. So it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not gonna like, you know.
Yeah.
Do you know his GF? I don't know Schwartz's GF. I don't know him. I don't know her. I don't. I think that she was a fan of the show. That's what I was told. Mm-hmm. But he seems happy, so, like, let's go, you know what I mean?
And that's all you care about.
That's all I care about is Schwartz's happiness.
Okay, so after that, Zach Wickham, who you guys know from The Valley and is Kristen's best friend, commented on the live, being like, okay, so, let's start with a few corrections. You never talk with Tom because he doesn't want to talk with you, and if he does, it's out of politeness. Sophia's not a fan of the show, but you sure were when you met Kristen. And I could go on, but I'll just end on one note. You are the one that gave up your friendship with Kristen and decided that being on TV was more important than someone who was there, who has been there for you, supported you, paid for you when no one else was. Don't say you wouldn't be friends with Kristen again like you have a choice. And then Kristen responded to that, LOL. So, I don't know, Joe. Reality TV is so, so not for you. And I understand that she wanted to tell her narrative and get her story out there, but I just don't know how much it was necessary. Like, I mean, I wasn't in her life, but like, how much were people really talking about her before she was on TV? Like, if it really was just this one message or comment from Katie on Instagram or Twitter, like, I don't really know, but this has just been so harmful for her mental health, it really seems, and I really hope that her friends can sort of help her see that. Stassi Schroeder is coming out with a new book, so I think this is her third book. This one is called You Can't Have It All, The Basic Bitch Guide to Taking the Pressure Off, and I think it's about realizing that you can't do everything, and that sounds good. I'm not really a self-help book kind of gal, but, you know, good for her. What else do we got in the news? Mary Cosby called Lisa Barlow St. Henry the R word. So right now the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City are filming, and apparently they are in Mexico City, if that is to the best of my knowledge. And so what I have been told is that Mary Cosby allegedly called Lisa Barlow's 12-year-old son, Henry, the R-word, in a heated argument amid production for The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, Season 5. Insider claimed that the offensive remark was made during a crazy fight that took place between the women earlier this month, noting that Barlow's castmates, including returning stars Heather Gay, Whitney Rose, Meredith Marks, and Angie Katsanavis, were perturbed by Cosby's part in the exchange. The entire cast was beyond grossed out by Cosby's alleged use of the slur, the source explains. So, wow. I mean, Mary was always inappropriate, so I do not put this past her, and she has made inappropriate remarks before, which is why she was kicked off the show before. So, I mean, what can we expect? But I guess I'm looking forward to the season. And I guess the last thing in the news is that Tom Sandoval has responded to Rachel Levis's lawsuit by way of his lawyer. So this response was filed on April the 9th, and basically what this response is saying is that they want to file a demurrer if they cannot come to an agreement on a dismissal of this case. And what a demurrer means is that basically they're arguing that what is being alleged doesn't have sufficient facts to prove that the specific laws being alleged to be broken were broken. And here are the reasons that they're giving. They're saying that Rachel took the recording and sent it to Tom, so it wasn't intentional for him to have it. They're saying that eavesdropping is meant to only apply to audio, not video, and the concern here was the sexually explicit video and not the sounds that were coming out of it. And that they're saying that because Rachel alleged that many people knew about the affair and they weren't particularly discreet about it, and basically what they're saying is everything, if they're taking everything that Rachel says as true, which includes saying that Ariana admonished them for getting handsy and to save it for season 11, and the fact that they were on a reality show, which kind of blurs the concept between private and public life anyways, they're saying that she couldn't expect the communications to be confidential for the purposes of eavesdropping. All of that is insane. Firstly, we all know that Tom took the recording. Ariana used the word screen recording. Okay, actually, I'm just going to read from you guys what they're actually saying in terms of the recording. So what they're saying is that, okay, they're saying these videos were created by Levis and published by Levis to Sandoval via a consensual exchange on FaceTime, i.e. their video calls. Based on Levis's own allegations, Sandoval merely saved private copies of the videos that Levis had filmed and shared with him. So, again, makes no sense. First of all, Bravo has footage of him admitting on camera that he took the screen recording without her consent. That was never aired, obviously, but we all know it exists. Second of all, like I said, Ariana said it was a screen recording. Third of all, is she sending him private recordings while they're on FaceTime? That's not even a thing. Fifth of all, one of you is lying. Obviously it's Tom, but one of you is lying because either way, this can be found out by literally the forensically, by looking at the phone, right? They'll do their forensic analysis of the phones, and they'll be able to determine this. So whoever is lying is an idiot, because this can so easily be proven. And it's such a bizarre argument. And the whole concept that eavesdropping, I mean, I don't know California law to know that well enough, but for them to say that it only applies to the audio and not the video, I mean, that would be wild and doesn't protect anybody, right? Because if the law is only supposed to account for audio, what about all of these, you know, sexually explicit videos and photography and all of images. There's so many other things that can fall under that category. So if eavesdropping doesn't capture it, then what does, right? And I would assume Rachel's legal counsel would know. On the topic of legal counsel, everybody started kind of losing their minds, being like, wait a minute, one of these guys is Scott Peterson's lawyer. And everybody was like, wait, is it Tom Sandoval that got Scott Peterson's lawyer? Because one of them is named Mark Garagos. And then we're like, wait a minute, both of these men are named Garagos. And it's like, wait a minute, Rachel's lawyer and Tom's lawyer are actually brothers. So Mark Garagos is Tom's lawyer, and Matthew Garagos is Rachel's lawyer, and one of them is Scott Peterson's lawyer. I honestly can't even keep track of this, but Matthew Garagos, whichever one is Scott Peterson's lawyer is Rachel's lawyer, not Tom's lawyer. And people are like, is this a conflict of interest? And it's not, because at the end of the day, nobody can talk about their cases regardless, but it's kind of funny to think about the fact that there was actually a mediation call as part of this to try to get the case dismissed or whatever, and they weren't able to resolve it, which led to this demurrer, which is the thing that they're filing, saying that it doesn't support the facts. But imagine that this phone call was happening between brothers and them being like, fine, we can't come to an agreement. I'll see you tonight for dinner at Mom's, right? Like, it just seems so ridiculous. But I'm very curious to see Ariana's response and what she's going to say. And I'm curious to see what Rachel's legal counsel files back, because I, with regards to the video, like the fact that it's being contested as to who sent the video is just wild. So I'm very curious to see what comes with that. And that's it for news of the week.
You did have sex with her?
Yes, it's true.
Rotten hill.
Okay, let's get into Rachel Goes Rogue, chapter 20. So this is her episode from last week. So there was quite a bit in this episode, and this was after the episode of Vanderpump Rules that aired, which was about Bethany's podcast. So this was basically her response to that. She said that she doesn't like that the cast picked and chose what she said from the podcast and spun it in their way to make her look like a bad person. She said it seems like the cast's response to her podcast was extreme. She said she knows that the show is not healthy for her and it targets her insecurities, and she doesn't like being in an emotional state where she feels she needs to defend herself. And if she doesn't, people are going to consume that, and she thinks that and think that's actually what was said. That's kind of interesting that she said that, because it kind of reminds me of Meghan Markle in her Netflix documentary, where she said that, you know, people would come up to her on the street and say, like, I can't believe you did this or that. And she would be like, oh my God, I didn't realize people were actually just believing the tabloids. So, you know, I totally understand that concept of wanting to defend yourself and make sure that the truth gets out there, because people will just believe what is out there, right? She says she doesn't want to allow them to rewrite her narrative. She said about the whole thing with the comment that Sheena said that Ariana and Rachel were just acquaintances at best. She said what she actually said was that they were acquaintances who became friends through the show. Ariana would stand up for her and encourage her, but they never had a deep conversation so that she would have with a best friend. She said they hung out in group settings, but she stands by what she said. She gets that any level of friendship, it's messed up. But production chose to run with the narrative that they were best friends, which wasn't the case. Now, I was confused by this where she said production, because I don't really get the sense in season 10 that she was best friends with Ariana. I would say more so with Sheena, and that, like, she's close with Ariana, but I didn't get the narrative from season 10 that they were best friends. I got more so that narrative from Scandoval, right? It was, you know, you slept with my best friend, and she didn't even deny that until after therapy, which I thought was so interesting. The concept that Ariana said that they spent a lot of time together. She said that actually in the podcast, she said that they did hang out a lot in group settings because Tom would invite her, and that she never spent time with just the two of them alone off camera, or that it was never just the two of them alone off camera. Rachel said that Tom would actually get her in a mental headspace where she would try to get more comfortable hanging out with Ariana in a group setting. She said this may sound like excuses, but she wasn't physically comfortable hanging out with Ariana in group settings, and Tom told her that she noticed. This is interesting because didn't she hang out with Ariana alone the weekend before Scandoval broke? Like, I thought that Ariana had talked about that quite openly, so it's interesting that she never really addressed that, because I definitely think they hung out alone a few days before Scandoval broke, and it was Rachel that actually had asked her to hang out. She goes on to say that she feels like she's done so much to change her behavior, so it's weird to be re-experiencing this all a year later, because it's easy to get sucked back into that headspace. Yeah, I can't imagine doing that. That would be so insane to, like, go and do the work and then have to watch people talk about you and bring it all back up. That must be, like, a nightmare. She said she wasn't sure if the show was still filming when she did Bethany's podcast. So this is interesting because on Nick Vile's podcast this week, Kate Arthur was on and she was talking about that piece. And she's like, that was the exact same period of time that Rachel was, you know, trying to negotiate. So of course she knew that filming was happening. I don't know, man. Then Rachel says when she put it out, she wanted to take accountability for her actions and reflected. And she wanted to call out the way that production was treating her. She wasn't really thinking about how the cast would react. And she said that at that time, she was still protecting Chom and chose not to throw him under the bus because she still had those feelings for him where she didn't want to betray him. And I thought that was interesting because this was the period of time where she had already left therapy. And it was in therapy that they had taught her that he had betrayed her, that she didn't actually betray him. So I wonder why still at that point, once she had left therapy and decided never to speak with him again, why she was still protecting him, when she says that, you know, therapy had already taught her that she didn't need to protect him. She said that Sheena had said in the episode that Rachel had said that Sheena had a savior complex and their friendship was mutually beneficial, that she didn't pay for parking, cable, stock toilet paper, had sex in her bed, and only paid $1,000 in rent. Rachel said that what she actually said on her podcast was Sheena had offered her apartment and had created this narrative that she was this sister that Rachel had never had and that she didn't pay rent, which isn't true. She did pay rent and she cat sat for her cat and did her podcast and said that was the podcast that she had done with her was the number one most listened to podcast. So she's trying to create this narrative that Rachel had taken advantage of her. Rachel said that Sheena had offered her apartment and she wasn't sure if she was going to go back to the show or not or go back to school. And Sheena was like, look, you're helping me out by paying $1,000 since we are staying in San Diego. She said, take the master bedroom. Sheena had encouraged her and had been setting her up with guys and encouraged her to talk about her sex life. And they filmed the podcast on her bed. So she has a problem with it now. Okay, I do agree with the money because, like, obviously they had an agreement about, like, how much Rachel was going to pay. So to say, like, you didn't pay for this, this, or this, that is annoying because, like, obviously you had an agreement. Like, she didn't come up with $1,000 out of the air. If your apartment cost $4,300, did you ask Rachel to pay you $4,300? Like, obviously you had an agreement as to what she was going to pay. But having sex in her bed is, like, screwed up. Even if Sheena was trying to set you up with guys, I don't think that makes it okay they did it in her bed. Even if you recorded the podcast on her bed, that doesn't make it okay to have sex in her bed. I think she needs to take a beat on that one. She said that Allie had said in the episode that Rachel said in the podcast that she had never loved Tom, which is not what she had said last summer. Rachel said what she actually said was that she believed she was in love with Tom at that time. Looking back, she can see that she wasn't. Rachel said that the source of their main arguments was that she wanted him to actually break up with Ariana publicly, and he kept saying that he was trying to. Rachel said that she was seeing someone before her and Tom, and this is the person that she was actually talking about on Sheena's podcast, and then he had hit her up, and they actually hung out, and then Tom ended up calling her a sociopath. She said that that's not fair because she wanted to be exclusive with him, but since he's not exclusive with her, it's not fair to her. She said that Tom called her selfish in the episode, which reminds her of when he called her selfish for wanting to stay in the mental health facility. She doesn't know what work he's done, but it doesn't really show. She said that he was controlling and manipulative to keep her in his grasp, that he tried to talk her out of going to the facility multiple times, which she's told us. He told her and her parents it was a cult and it would brainwash her. She thinks that he knew she would get good therapy and it would jeopardize his control over her. And she thinks he's upset in this episode because he's officially lost that control over her. And again, this is last week's episode with, when they're talking about Bethany's podcast. She said that she could give him some grace considering he was going through a lot at the time and he was seeking an escape. And in some way they found each other to escape to, but you don't record someone on an intimate FaceTime without asking for permission first if you really care about someone. Rachel said that, she had no, like, when he was saying, like, she used him, she's like, she had no purpose to use him, as he claimed. She was broken and needed someone to help her process her heartbreak with James, and he was that for her, and she was that for him. She read a bit from her journal, where she wrote that Tom said that there isn't something called love addiction. He told her she was becoming dependent. He called her selfish. She had shared that she had had dark thoughts, and he said it was a bad idea if she stayed. He called her mom gaslighting and manipulative. He said the facility would brainwash her. She said that she was heartbroken that James moved on so quickly. So in a way, she did get with Tom because she wasn't able to process those emotions. And she thought Tom and James were actually trying to sort of one-up each other in that scene where they were fighting about the podcast. Then she starts getting really emotional, and she says she feels like she's fighting a battle that's impossible to win. She says they're saying things about her that are inaccurate and she has this urge to defend herself, but all she wants is to move on. But no matter what she does, it seems to always be wrong. And then she says, is she supposed to just let them keep talking about her? And she says she doesn't like being misrepresented. So I don't know. There was something about this episode where it felt like this was over. Like, it's not like she wasn't continuing to say things that are concerning about Tom, right? It's not like she didn't add more stuff here where we aren't like, oh, Tom's a jerk. But something about this time, it just made it feel like it's enough. Like, it just sort of feels like she's projecting now. And she, obviously she has every right to say what she wants to say and get her feelings out. But I don't know. There's just something about it just feeling done, right? It's sort of like when Schwartz was saying to Lisa, you know, the affair, you know, people are getting over it now. Time has passed and, you know, Tom needs to move on. I've never said about her that she should go back to the show or that she should leave or that she should not do her podcast or that she should go off and do this and that, because whatever makes you feel better for your mental health, whatever is working for you. But for the first time, I'm starting to agree with other people and other podcasters and saying maybe this isn't good for her mental health. I think this is really harming her. And she's right. She isn't ever going to win. There's nothing that she can ever do to win. People are still so against her. I mean, she had that little moment where people were starting to come around, and then she started suing Ariana and people went back again, and now people are just over her. And I just don't know if this is the best move forward. So then I was debating whether I'd even continue to keep recapping her podcast. Then yesterday she released, or sorry, late Tuesday night, released another episode, chapter 22. She said that she actually can't go rogue today because she recorded a very personal episode talking about her experience with domestic violence. She said it's important for her to share it, but she has been advised not to air the whole thing. She said there are such valuable pieces in this episode that she thinks are incredibly important to share. She says, if you've ever been in a situation like I have, she hopes you can use this episode as a resource and as a tool to find a way to get yourself help and to heal. So the episode is with Dr. Gail Saltz, and she's a psychoanalyst and an expert in the domestic violence field. So I'm not going to recap the episode because I don't recap episodes where she doesn't talk about Vanderpump Rules and they are with therapists. But the fact that she says that she was going to talk about domestic violence and was told that she can't, I knew it. I told you guys. This is about James. This has always been about James. I have been saying this for months. Go back and listen to, if you're a newer listener, go back and listen to my Pump Rules and Pump Rules Adjacent episode 5, where I deep dive into all things James Kennedy. I knew he was abusive. I've known this forever. And slowly we were getting somewhere. Kristen had come out saying that she was going to speak on it soon when Luke called him DJ Beats Women, and then she said she was going to speak on it soon. And it felt like people were starting to come out. I felt like she was going to come out, and then Rachel was going to come out. But then again, I guess Rachel had released her lawsuit, and everybody kind of lost their minds. And then the Valley's been doing so well, so I don't know if that's why Kristen never said anything, and now Rachel can't say anything because I guess she's legally not able to, or what have you. Guys, please take this seriously. I know that James is like number one guy in the group right now, but remember, this is in comparison to a bunch of crappy men. So we know that he pushed Kristen into a bush and that footage was cut. We know that there are other situations. And again, go back and listen to my Pump Rules and Pump Rules Adjacent episode 5 to get more information on that. I am so horrified and upset that she can't speak on this. And at the end of the day, though, given how people feel about her, I don't know that anyone would believe her. And that's the end of Rachel Goes Rogue for this week.
I take sketch comedy very seriously, so it offends me when people just think that they can just do it.
Okay, let's get into this week's episode of Vanderpump Rules. So we start with Jax going over to James and Allie's house to talk about their upcoming appearance together at Sir. I guess they're doing this brunch DJ thing. And James is like, yeah, we've come a long way since, you know, they used to fight all the time at Sir. And then there's like the flashback to, you need to get more cosmopolitans, pumptini, right? And then Jax is talking about how much he hates Katie, and he's saying that Katie is telling everyone that he cheated on his wife, and he's like, is she mad that she can't bang any more of her ex's friends, or mad at me, so because she can't bang me, and that's why she's coming after me? And James is like, he has to go with Katie, between the both of them, because, you know, there's something here considering Jax's checkered past. And he didn't look too shocked at the idea of Jax cheating on Brittany, and I don't think anybody would be too shocked. Then we have a scene over at Sheena's. Brittany comes over, and Sheena's telling her that she and Brock have been at each other's throats lately, and Brock is actually meeting with his friend Luke. And Brock tells his friend Luke that he knows they need a nanny, But, you know, for him, he needs that as well because he needs to be able to step away so he can fill his cup. And it adds tension in their marriage because Sheena is the breadwinner. And Luke says, yeah, but you knew that that was the arrangement. And Brock is like, yeah, but it's different since we sold the gym and it's been hard for him not bringing home the money anymore. He says he wants to give himself purpose. So I don't know if you guys remember, but so Brock played rugby, and then when he moved here, it was like on an investor's visa for like he was opening some gyms, and then they sold the gyms. It was like the Homebody gyms or the Homebody app, or that was the thing he was doing. And now Sheena's the breadwinner. But, you know, I didn't realize, like, I guess a lot of people just sort of assume when, you know, your wife is taking care of you that you're lazy and you're not doing anything, but it doesn't seem like that's the situation. He's saying he wants to do something. He wants to feel like useful, right? And I totally understand that. Then we have Sheena telling Brittany that, you know, it's hard for Brock that he's not the breadwinner. And Brittany agrees. It's been hard for Jax as well, because there was a period of time where she was making a bit more money. And she said that, you know, Jax and Brock are both like manly men, so it's hard for them if their woman makes more money. And Sheena said that her OCD is worse because people are always making comments about him and Lala all the time. And she doesn't like think that, but her brain sort of goes there now. Like, even a nanny, like, could something happen between him and a nanny? And, you know, it's so upsetting that her OCD is doing this for her, and we'll get a little bit more into that later about these like intrusive thoughts that she's having. But, you know, it's interesting to hear Brittany again bringing up issues that her and Jax have in their marriage, right? We're seeing bits of that on The Valley, and we're even seeing bits of it here where she's saying that, you know, this financial sort of power dynamic that they had did have an impact on their relationship. Then we see Katie and Schwartz going for food, and Katie says that even though she said she would never hang out with him, like, alone, it's sort of weird for her, this concept of, like, spending more than a decade with someone and then, like, never hanging out with them again. So then they talk about Tori. Schwartz tells the camera that he thinks Katie competing with him over Tori is her way of being in his life, and it's their new post-divorce love language. Like, that is the most LOL thing I've ever heard. Like, okay. At least he's positive about the future for them. I don't know. Then we have a scene of Brock and Sheena having a date night, and they talk about her being the main breadwinner, and he says that all he wants is to take the pressure off of her, but Sheena's like, you do that, and he does. Like, you can see him, like, being such a hands-on father, or, like, following Sheena around with, you know, the phone, like, vlogging for her and stuff. Like, he is such a good support system for her. And then Brock tells the camera that, you know, first Sheena says, sorry, you know, have you ever thought about this being a second chance at you being a dad, right? And she gets emotional and he gets emotional, and Brock tells the camera that, you know, he has to keep working at building a relationship with his older kids so that one day they're willing to have him in their lives. And this whole thing is so, you know, sad and upsetting, and it is still a bit confusing as to what the situation is. So as you guys may recall, Brock has two children in Australia. There was a domestic violence situation between him and his ex-wife, but that isn't the reason he's not allowed to see the kids. There was a situation where when he was supposed to move here, he was supposed to send money, and then he didn't. And so he had to get caught up with child support, but then he did. And then over the holidays, he went to Australia, and then on Shenanigans said that he wasn't able to see him, the kids. And so it sort of implied that either the mother or the children didn't want to see him. And so what Sheena's sort of saying here is, like, she wants him to be with Summer. She wants him to be a full-time dad. There's nothing wrong with that. She actually fully supports that. And I think that's actually so wonderful, right? Because you see a very different side on Summer House when we're dealing with Carl and Lindsay and the whole dynamics of work, and we'll get into that later. But, you know, Sheena actually wants a more hands-on dad. She wants a stay-at-home dad. She wants a man who actually isn't so focused on work, who's more focused on family, and I actually think that's kind of nice. But I totally, again, understand where Brock is coming from, because you need to feel useful as well, and it's, and to each their own as to what makes you feel useful. Sheena says that sometimes it makes her feel like, you know, they're not enough when he wants to go off and work and do something else. And they decide that they're going to do couples therapy, and they say, I love you. And you know what? I do really appreciate how well they communicate. Not so much this season. They've been fighting quite a bit, but they do really work on their relationship. And, you know, I feel like she's not just going to let this not work, right? And she basically says that in this episode, right? Like, I'm going to make this work. Then we have Schwartz and Sandoval going to get tattoos. Schwartz gets Gordo and Butters, which I think is so cute. Like, Gordo and Butters are the cutest dogs, and I love the idea of getting, like, these realistic dog tattoos on you, and I definitely think I will be getting one of my dog as well. They talk about Kyle Chan's launch party for his whiskey in San Francisco and how everyone's going. This is the finale party, so and it actually looks from the next couple of episodes that maybe a couple of episodes, maybe even two or three, are actually all going to be the finale party. Sandoval tries to get Schwartz to move in again, and he says that he's already has a soda gun and beer taps in the house, and I never knew that those were requirements for a house or things that you could even put in, but, you know, Schwartz is going to miss out if he doesn't move in. He's not going to have a beer tap or a soda gun. So then we're at the Sir Brunch hosted by James and Jax, and everybody shows up. Then we have a scene of Lisa talking to Guillermo and saying, like, how are we having a brunch hosted by Jax Taylor? He's been so disrespectful to me. How did this fall through the cracks? Lisa, are you serious? The show is called Vanderpump Rules. You knew about this? Don't even give me this. So Jax walks in and he sits down with James and Lisa because he knows he's got to have the one-on-one with her. And Lisa says to him, like, how dare you come here acting like everything's fine when on a podcast you said, I'm a prop and I'm super superfluous. I can't even say the word. That's the point, right? Jax is like, I have no idea what that word means. Superfluous. Whatever. The point is, he doesn't know what that word means. Neither do I. Jack says, you wrote me off. You haven't checked in with us once. And he's like, if I said something wrong in the heat of the moment, I apologize. So she agrees to move on. And then Jack sort of looks at James and is like, all right, like, we're cool. We're going to go do this. And James is like, yeah, of course. But then he like looks over at Lisa and then he realizes like that's not his decision. And he kind of cowers and he's like, oh, is it okay for him to stay, Lisa? Oh, okay, okay. So then James invites everyone to a pool party at his house afterwards. And Lala pretends to call her husband to make sure it's okay. And then Brock picks up his pretend phone being his hand and he pretends to answer and is like, Lala, you're coming with me. And then they pan over to Sheena, who has a look in her eye for a split second of like questioning, but not quite jealousy. But like there's something there if you look at it. And Jax is like on fire. He is just like so hammered. He keeps mentioning that he has a babysitter and that he has a kid and that his wife is letting him drink, and he's acting like this is his only chance to rage. So he is just like walking around being like, I have a son, I can drink, I don't even know. And everybody's like, take a drink every time Jax mentions being a father, because we all know he does that. So then we have a scene of the girls talking with Allie about how James is supposed to come with her to Ohio for her best friend's wedding that she's in, but he doesn't want to leave Hippie with anyone, so he doesn't want to go. And Allie feels like she's already had to make so many sacrifices for, like, with having Hippie, how she has to sleep in the guest room with the cats while James sleeps in the main room with Hippie. And the girls tell James that, you know, she supports you with everything you do and you need to go with her and you need to support her. And James just gets so emotional when it comes to Hippie, and he starts to cry, and he's talking about how much Hippie has been through and that he's not ready yet, and he's telling the girls that they just don't understand. And I hate James, obviously, you guys know this, but in this one circumstance, I can sort of understand, because my dog has also been through quite a bit. She's been rehomed a bunch. She medically has been through so many things. Even just lately, I feel like every single week we're at the vet, and, you know, we've just been through so much together that maybe I'm not doing the right thing for her, but I've never left her for more than an hour, and I can't even remember the last time I even left her for an hour, which I know isn't for the best. But again, I know exactly where James is coming from, because I don't feel ready either, and I don't feel like she is ready to be left longer, and all I want to do is protect her and support her. So I actually got quite emotional watching that scene, because in that one circumstance, I totally understood. And James starts saying to Sheena and Lala, like, how many nannies did you guys go through? I don't want to do that with Hippie. I just don't trust anybody. And Lala's like, yeah, I don't understand dropping my baby off with some random woman. And she says to the camera, like, how can you tell me I don't get it, you buffoon? So then we have Jax and Katie. They just start going they're just fighting it out, totally screaming at each other. And he's like, why don't you talk to Brittany? And she's like, because I don't like you. And they're just totally going at it. And, you know, Katie's like, she didn't intend for it to be against her friendship to break up with Brittany as well, but she has just such a toxic husband. Then we see Schwartz pulling Ariana aside, and he wants to talk to her about Sandoval wanting him to move in, and because he knows that she and him are cool now, so he feels like he can talk to her. And I feel like I missed something there. Like, when did Ariana and Schwartz become cool? Because I feel like the last we saw was, like, the last party at James's house, like the water party, and then she was like, Schwartz, you remind me of Sandoval, get out of here. So I don't know when they became cool, and I sort of feel like we missed something. Not that she was like hating him necessarily, but I sort of feel like we missed that part. So basically he's asking like if it would bother her if he did move in there, and she actually says that it wouldn't, and he was so shocked by that. But he says that he can't afford to anyways. Then Sandoval and Kyle show up, and Sandoval bends down to pet Hippie, and he's like, oh, if I ever see your mom again, I'll tell her you say hi. Dude, you spend the last episode like going to town on Rachel, calling her selfish, calling her this and that, and now you're like, if I ever see your mom again. Dude, I can't. Then we have Sheena and Brock, they just start fighting in front of everyone because she wants to leave to read Summer a book, and Brock wants to stay and wants Sheena to just let the nanny do her job. But Sheena's saying, like, I just want that moment with my daughter. It's not that I don't want to allow the nanny to do it. It's not that I don't want to hang out. I actually want to do that with my daughter. So they're fighting about that. And then Ariana's like, oh, you know, I'm sort of worried about Sheena. But then, so she tries to go to talk to Sheena, but then she sees Sandoval going to talk over to Sheena. So she's like, never mind. So Sandoval talks to Sheena, and he's talking about how it's been a lot from her. And she's like, yeah, she gets that. But, you know, she had went through a lot too. So yeah, she capitalized on it. And Sandoval's like, all you had to do was just not do that, though. And Sheena's like, yeah, but all you had to do was keep your mouth shut. And this is a reference to him saying on the reunion that Sheena punched Raquel. Sandoval's like, I need you to understand you were not involved and that you were not cheated on. And Sheena's like, she filed a restraining order against me. And Brock is like, no, dude, you were writing songs about this too. And Sheena's like, now I have screwed up thoughts about Brock and Lala. You did that! And James is like, yeah, I think that too. And then Sandoval has the nerve to pull out the history books and be like, Sheena, you have been the other woman in a relationship too. And then she starts screaming at him that she was 21 and she storms out. And it's just like, Sandoval, like, he always does this. He always has to try to one-up everyone by trying to be like, well, you did this too. Well, I'm sorry, but... And it's just so irrelevant in this situation. I'll say it like Sheena did. You know what? I'll let her explain it in the VPR after show. She does a good job doing that, and I'll recap that. But it's just wild that he will do that in every situation. The one thing I have to side with Sheena on here, though, is the lack of trust, right? This affair, if anything, did affect Sheena and James in the sense that now they're looking at their friends and being like, can we even trust these people? Because, you know, you have these closest people in your life, and then they go and do this thing behind your back that you never expected them to do. So now she has these screwed up thoughts about Brock and Lala, right? Like, and James is like, yeah, now I have these trust issues too. And it's totally valid where they're coming from. And I think that Tom owes them an apology for that, because he's created this situation where they feel like they can't trust anyone. And I feel like that's totally fair. Now let's get into the VPR after show. So Brittany says that she hated that Jax got into a fight with Katie. Schwartz clarifies the whole Stassi and Beau of it all, because that's basically why Katie isn't talking to Brittany or Jax. So Schwartz clarifies that by saying that Stassi and Beau were pissed off about Jax and Brittany not coming to their... It wasn't about them not coming to the wedding. It was about them canceling so last minute. Katie said that Brittany had stopped being so engaged in the conversations about the wedding at one point. And then the morning that they were supposed to leave, Brittany said that they weren't going to make it because they didn't get Cruz's passport in time. Jax explains that he suggested that Brittany and her mom go, but then her mom's best friend's husband died. So Jax was like, okay, it's just not in the cards to go. But Katie says there was a group chat where Jax was talking about not going and how he didn't want to go and that they were going to a golf tournament instead. And she was just like, it was so rude. And Katie just felt like it was a lot of lies and that she needed a break because Jax is such an asshole and she didn't mean for it to be permanent. She said that Brittany was like, I texted her about her move. And then Katie was like, yeah, I did get that text, but I forgot to text her back. And, you know, I haven't heard from her since or aside from that. And Lala says, okay, but, you know, Brittany did reach out to you, so you can't say that she didn't reach out to you, because she did, you just didn't respond. Sheena says that it's not the same what happened with her and Eddie when she was 21 and was lied to while Sandoval was 41 and in a relationship and knew what he was doing. So yes, that was Sheena's explanation, which I felt was a very concise way of explaining it. The fact that he brought this up made her feel like, do you still see me this way? Which is interesting, right? If you're going to bring up something from somebody's past that you think is dead and buried and you think that nobody cares about anymore, and if somebody's going to bring that up about you, it's like, are you bringing this up because you consider me this? You consider me this mistress? Is that how you look at me? Tom said that the piling on was so relentless, and there were definitely, like, it was Sheena and Lala who were spearheading that. James said that Sheena didn't ask for Sandoval and Rachel to be taken away from her as friends, so of course she was hurt by it. Jack says that in reference to Vanderpump Rules, that he helped create a masterpiece. He says that Lisa has actually cried to him about Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, saying, "You're the only one I can talk to about this." Now, he has said this before, I believe, on the Toast podcast, and it's funny because now he has said it twice, and we know that Jax is a liar, but it's funny that he has maintained this lie, because I truly, truly doubt that Lisa Vanderpump came to him crying, being like, "You're the only one that can help me deal with the trolls of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills." He said that it bothered him that Lisa didn't reach out when they had crews. Brittany said she didn't hear from Lisa after they left the show, and that she doesn't even get invites to Pandora's son's birthday parties for crews. Everyone talks about how to tell if someone is a midlife crisis, and some people think that Jesse is. And Lala says that maybe Jesse has little man syndrome because he is a small man. Brittany talks about finances and how when she was making more money than Jax, it was hard for him because he and Brock are both like the alpha male types, and they both feel like the man is supposed to be like the breadwinner. Lala says that she feels like Sheena has always chosen men where she is the alpha. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I mean, it sort of seems that way, but also, like, men are lazy, right? And maybe she's just, you know, all the men that I have met in my life or dated in my life were unemployed, basically, like, or were about to quit a job, or, you know, it's, I think she's actually just surrounding herself with men who are just not ambitious necessarily, which isn't Brock's situation because he is ambitious. But when you look at, like, you know, Adam and Shay and people like that, those were just like lazy men, in my opinion. Sheena said that if Brock did have a full-time job and he was traveling, she wouldn't like that. And she actually likes that they're able to work together. Sheena said that people think he's just living off of her, but he's the hardest worker she knows and he's so ambitious. Brock says that he wants to land on TV production or movies for his career. And Sheena says that Brock is actually developing two shows right now. The fact that he's actually able to be with Summer as much as he is, she really likes that. And support comes for her in more ways than just financial. And I totally agree with that because, again, he is such a hands-on dad. James explains that Hippie has been through a lot and he didn't want to leave him. And he was, you know, he doesn't want him to be scared and be like, "Is my dad leaving again?" He says that God has given him back to him and that he's his main priority. Janet says that, you know, that she is friendly with some of her exes because they did a little bit of Valley crossover here. And Sheena says that she has hooked up with Jason before. I hate this. Like, I heard this before, but I didn't want to bring it up before because I hate that Sheena has a history with everybody's ex. Like, Nima was the guy she was trying to set up Rachel with, but she had gone on a few dates with Nima. Like, I feel like every person has a situation like that where it's almost like Sheena wants to have a little tie to everyone's relationship in a way, almost to be like, you know, "I had him first," or something. I don't know. I just hate that. James says that he and Allie worked it out where they were actually able to give Hippie to someone to care for him, and they figured out their sleeping situation. Brittany said that Sheena and Brock are so lucky to have Erica around, who can watch Summer whenever they want because her mom is all the way in Kentucky. And Brock said they have a regular nanny now and they have some boundaries with Erica now, which has been good for their family. And that is it for Vanderpump Rules and the Vanderpump Rules After Show.
This is why my show is successful. This is
actually not your show. Okay, let's get into the Valley. So it starts with Luke and Kristen talking at home, and he's talking about how he wants more of his life out there. He says he doesn't have his tools or his fishing stuff, so he wants to have a space for that. And he says, like, he feels like he's in her apartment. And I feel like that's totally fair. Like, if she wants him to be there long term, he has to feel like it's his too. But at the same time, this guy is, like, never going to live in LA, and this will probably be a huge source of contention for them ongoing. And I'm still very confused about this baby situation because they're trying to bring a baby into this world, but they haven't settled on where they're gonna live. She wants to live in LA, he wants to live in Colorado. Neither are really willing to commit to either permanently. So I'm very curious to see what'll happen. But, you know, again, this is why the Valley is so good, because these are real life conversations that real life couples have when they're making decisions about moving forward in their relationships and becoming parents, right? So that's why it's really cool that the Valley has all these relationships at all these different stages. We have a scene of Jasmine and Jax meeting for drinks. Jasmine says that he needs to get on it with Brittany in terms of sexy time, and he's really lacking in that department. Then he says that he doesn't want to end up like Jesse and Michelle. And Jesse told Jax that if his marriage lasts the next 2 months, he'll be shocked. He said that Kristen told him that Michelle has actually been texting other guys, and that was the whole I'm protecting you thing that Michelle, or that Kristen was saying to Michelle in those texts, being like, don't worry, I'll keep your secrets, and don't worry, like, I've always protected you, I'll always protect you. Jax says to Jasmine that he's worried that Kristen is going to say something, which would be life-altering. And you know it's bad when Jax is worried that the gossip is too much, right? So Jax says that he's having an event at the Mondrian because he's partnering with a hair company for men losing their hair, which he believes you have to start at right away. Then they flash to Danny in a confessional saying that Jax's hair is thinning, and kudos to him for turning that into money. We have a scene with Michelle and her daughter saying that she realizes it would be better to raise Isabella not around fighting, which is all Isabella sees right now. And then we have Nia and Danny talking. Nanny should be there, like celebrity name. She was talking about her job is basically, since being Miss America or Miss USA, sorry, Miss USA, she's been hired by brands to post on social media. But Danny says that he's actually the main brand winner. But then they kind of agree that the money comes out of the same bank account, so they're both helping. So again, this is such a good, you know, visual of us to see relationships and all the different issues in a relationship. We were just talking about Jax and Brittany and their finances, and now here we're seeing Nia and Danny talk about how they manage their finances best for them, for their relationship to work. Danny has some of the guys come over to help him build a crib, and Jesse's there, and he's talking about how he met with that relationship coach, that marriage coach that he has, and this guy recommended that he take basically psychedelics and this like ayahuasca to sort of help him. And Danny says to the camera that it's great that Jesse's committed to working on his marriage, but can't he just do more couples therapy? And it seems like Jesse is getting more of an understanding of what his issue is. He says that he can use his aggression to shut people up, but it's not empowerment. It's being a monster without making people feel safe. And I feel like that was really, really insightful. And I don't know if that was something his coach told to him, but it definitely made it clear to him that his aggression is not getting him anywhere. He said that he's hoping Michelle will see the attraction and respect, but that he can't expect that now. And Danny tells him it's an ongoing everyday thing to choose to respect what she needs, and that will lead to a change on her end. But unfortunately, Michelle is just like so far gone, right? So it's sad to see Jesse take these steps and what seemingly are like these desperate steps when it's so clearly over. We have a scene of Jax bringing Brittany to Jax's bar because he wants her to be more involved. He doesn't want what happened with the Toms to happen to him. And Brittany tells him that he doesn't seem like he's okay. And he's like, yeah, I've been feeling overwhelmed. I'm stressed, you know, having the bar, being a dad, having a mortgage. And Brittany's like, well, we're still trying for another kid next month. And he's like, yeah, I definitely want another kid. But then she's like, look, I still need romance and, you know, we need to have date nights and we need to do all these things. And he's like, I feel like I'm going to cry. He looks so stressed. And it's clear that his mindset is definitely impacting their marriage, because if he's feeling like that, he can't be a good partner for her. And if he's talking about how he can't manage all of these things, and they're talking about adding a thing, well, kind of adding two things. They're talking about adding a kid and also adding more to their marriage, because they haven't been doing enough in their marriage, right? And, you know, you can't really have a kid until you've sort of have sex in your marriage, right? So, you know, it's very interesting, as I've said many times, just to sort of watch their relationship as these episodes go on and just sort of see where the cracks are, to see where these things are happening. So then we have the party at the Mondrian, which is Jax's hair party. And everyone is just sort of saying to the camera, like, they have no idea why this is happening. Jax has great hair, but, like, good for him for making his bank by making money off of this. But, you know, then Jasmine and Janet go off to talk. And Jasmine said that she doesn't feel comfortable telling Janet her entire conversation with Jax. She says that she feels like Jax is messy, but Janet is messy as well, which we keep hearing. But I feel like we're not getting enough Janet, right? Like, we keep hearing these little comments that she, you know, will drop a bomb and then step back, and that she's messy and that she's this and that. And then we see her doing this little side eye thing while, like, Kristen is fighting with Zach and other people. And, like, I just want to know what's going on, right? I feel like I've said before, we don't know so much about some of these characters because they're newer to us, right? So we're missing all of this history. And unfortunately, I just don't know if we're going to get it in like 4 more episodes, because I feel like this is what we're on episode 6, we're 10 maximum, and maybe we'll get it in season 2. But I definitely want to get more history on Janet and her relationship with this friend group and why people don't trust her 100%. So then Jasmine says that Kristen lies a lot, so she's not even sure about what Kristen told Jax, but Jax said something about Jesse and Michelle's marriage. This is what Jasmine is saying to Janet, where she's not telling her everything, and Jasmine feels like Jax should talk to Jesse about it. So there's another vendor at this Mondrian party who's like this hot girl named Gabby, and she's selling outfits for Burning Man or something. So then Jesse starts like flirting with her, and then Michelle comes by and finds him talking to her, and he's like, oh, she's, you know, doing this for Burning Man. And Michelle's like, are you going to Burning Man? And he's like, no. And she's like, come sit down. It's pretty funny. And then Jesse tells the camera, so then the core group sit down for dinner. They're all having like this dinner party, and Jesse tells the camera that he wasn't feeling great all day because before he left for the party, he had a session with his coach where he realized his marriage might be over, so he sort of quieted this dinner. Jax talks about how he's opening the bar sooner than Britt wants because they need to bring money in, and Brittany tells the camera that this is an example of them not being on the same page. Again, we're getting into issues in their marriage where, you know, she wants one thing, he wants a different thing when it comes to their business, which, you know, was obviously an issue with Tom and Katie as well. And, you know, in this situation, Jax wanted to make sure he brought Brittany in so that there wouldn't be conflicts in their marriage over the business, but they have different ideas about what to do with the business. So there's a conflict right there, and maybe this business wasn't a great idea for them. People start calling out Jesse for being quiet, and then he bangs his fist on the table again like last time, and Kristen's just like, no, this is not cute, you're a grown-ass man. And then Kristen makes it like a whole thing, and then she's just like, I want to leave, and then she's like, Jesse is offending me. And then they show subtitles of Kristen talking to a producer saying that Jesse is being gross and he's a horrific human, that she doesn't want to out their marriage. And then, like, so she's in the hallway, and then Jesse comes out there and he confronts her, and he's like, if you put information about my marriage out there that I don't know, I will bury you. And Kristen is like, I would never do that. And then she's like, walk the F away, walk the F away. And I don't know if you guys remember, like, the Diana situation with the Miami girl thing at Sir back in season 3, where she's like, walk the F away, Diana, bye, right? So it's like the exact same. She has the exact same sayings at the exact same time. I love it. And Luke comes out, and he's trying to get Jesse away from Kristen, and they are all fighting in the hallway, and there's cameras there, so it's like the cameras, Michelle, Luke, Jesse, Kristen, Zach comes out there, and Michelle's yelling at Kristen to stop attacking her husband, and she's just going off. Now, Michelle's nipple is totally out during this fight, which they blur, but I guess no one wanted to stop the momentum of the fight to cover her up, but I feel really bad for her. And Michelle starts yelling at Kristen to stop with the whole, like, you're protecting me thing. She's like, stop it. She's like, do you know what you have done to my life and my marriage and my daughter? And Kristen is like, you don't know what your husband is saying behind your back. She's like, your husband said that he's going to divorce you within 2 months. And then it flips to Jax, who's like, actually, it was the other way around. And then Zach tries to get Jesse to stop, and Jesse, like, fully pushes him into the wall. Production has to get involved. It gets completely wild. And Kristen finally announces that over a year ago, when Jesse and Michelle weren't doing well, Michelle had a boyfriend and was seeing him, and she wasn't against this because Jesse was such a piece of crap. And Kristen is like, I didn't sign up for all of this to go through all of this again. I'd rather be on Vanderpump Rules. And this is why I love The Valley. This was just such a chaotic scene. Like, that's pretty much the majority of the episode is this. And so we definitely know that Kristen and Michelle are not coming back from this. Michelle has already said in her AMAs that she is not friends with Kristen. This scene sort of felt like a finale scene, to be honest. So I'm curious to see where we go from here, because I think we're only halfway through the season. But this fight was so intense. Jesse gets so physical with everyone. And I'm very curious to see where we go from here. And that's it for this week of The Valley.
Summer should be fun. Mena, not fun.
Okay, let's get into last week's episode of Summer House. So we have Wes talking about how he realizes that finding a job is a very humbling process, and he didn't expect it to take so long or to be so difficult. And I totally get that, and that must be really, really stressful to him to go through, especially when he's starting to date someone new and he, you know, wants to impress her. So everyone else comes up for the weekend that weekend except for Jesse, and we have a scene of Lindsay and Danielle talking, and we haven't really seen them talk too much this summer. Lindsay's telling her that Carl went golfing for a couple of days last week, and it was nice to have some alone time. She said she doesn't need a lot, but the space is good, and it gave her a chance to miss him. I mean, I totally understand that, but again, they haven't really been together that long, right? They've only been together less than 2 years at this point, and they are getting married soon, so it's sort of strange where so close to your wedding, like 3 months prior, you're excited to have space from him. And, like, how we've seen Lindsay acting this whole summer, where she almost seems, like, annoyed by him, how he's not ambitious, how he wants to spend all this time with her, how, I don't know, she just doesn't seem like she likes him, which I feel like we've been saying for so long, but it really seems like at points like this, she doesn't even realize it, right? I mean, to us, it seems so obvious when she's saying, you know, like, I need space, or it was nice to have some space, that that's a normal positive thing. But I think from the outside looking in, it's very obvious that she just hates this man. Danielle talks about how she hooked up with someone last night. She said that she's sort of warming up to the idea of going on dates, but she's more into the hustle and doesn't want to get distracted. And she said, to be honest, the couples in the house aren't pushing her, like, to want to be in a relationship with either. Fair enough, right? Like, if you look at Lindsay and Carl, you look at Kyle and Amanda, it doesn't really make you want to move forward in a relationship. And I don't think Lindsay can really disagree on that. Amanda says that she and Kyle are working on letting things go and having fun together. So it was nice to have a episode with them without them fighting, because even though, you know, I don't know, they're just like our core couple, and it just feels so terrible just to see them fight and to see that they may not make it, because they sort of feel like the mom and dad of Summer House, and it just sort of doesn't feel okay when they are not okay. So they actually all go out to a club, which is funny, because I feel like most of the time you have some of them staying home and some of them going out, but this time everybody goes out. And Wes says, so he's talking to Lindsay at the club, and he's talking about how he and Sierra have been hanging out more, and they hang out during the week, but he said that she's sort of a slow burner. And he says, you know, Lindsay was like, oh, like, do you see this going past the summer? And he's like, well, he's not sure what her life will look like after the summer, since she just signed her modeling contract. Plus, you know, there's the whole idea of him being unemployed, right? And he just sort of feels self-conscious about that. Then there's a scene of Paige, Danielle, and Kyle talking at the club, and Paige tells Danielle and Kyle that she misses her friend Craig, and they're like, your friend? She's like, yeah, he's my friend. You know, the thing that Paige does where she basically acts like she hates Craig, right? And you know she's just doing it as a joke. It's that shtick she does, and I think people take it too seriously. I feel like it's like the Lisa Vanderpump treatment that she gives with Ken, where she pretends that they only have sex twice a year, like that whole thing. Like, I think it's just a shtick. Like, obviously she loves him very much. Paige says that she knows she's going to marry him, but it's on her terms. And Danielle says to her, like, you know, there's something holding you back, and you have his balls on a mantle. And Paige is like, I'm just not the kind of girl who's gonna act all reassuring. And, you know, but Paige is like, I'm gonna marry him. And then Danielle's like, honestly, I have to be honest with you, you are giving him nothing. And then Paige is like, you know, it's interesting to see Danielle do this, because she's seen her do it to every other girl, and now she's doing it to her. And, you know, it's interesting because it seems like Danielle is really trying hard this season not to get involved in Carl and Lindsay's relationship, which, great. But that's also made her sort of disappear, because I've sort of forgotten about Danielle this entire season, because that, I guess, was sort of her place, was as Lindsay's friend or as someone who contributes to their relationship in some way. But without that, she sort of hasn't really had anything this season, or hasn't really had a place. So I guess maybe she felt like to give herself something, or more screen time, or a storyline, or something, she would approach Paige with this. But I don't think that was a good move for so many reasons. One being, like, Paige really isn't a close friend of yours. And it's just sort of, you know, they've been together at that point, I think, like, 2.5 years. So it's really strange to approach someone in, like, a long-term serious relationship and say that you're giving them nothing when you're not even close with them. So they all party, and they seem to have, like, a really fun night. And Amanda partied so hard, and Kyle really loves that, because he knows that she did it for him. So the gang end up having an out-of-this-world party, which means, like, they're dressing as, like, aliens and stuff. And Lindsay thinks that the balloon guy from their last party was hot, and she has this idea to invite him for the single girls. Then we have Amanda, Paige, and Wes hanging out by the pool, and they're talking about how many dates until they have sex. So Wes was asking them, like, before you guys were in relationships, like, how long would you wait? And, you know, they're all giving different answers, and he's like, well, I'm on weekend 6. And the girls are like, yeah, but how many dates? And he's like, 2. And so I'm confused, because he says he's been hanging out with her in the city, but so you've hung out with her twice in the city? Like, it's been 6 weekends, so, like, 6 weeks, but you haven't hung out with her in the city more than twice? Like, you need to put in that time with her, right? Like, that's the dates. The weekend things are group hangs. They're not really considered dates, so I totally feel for Sierra on that end. Wes tells the camera that there must be a reason for it after this long. Maybe it's because she's never dated anyone younger, or because he doesn't have a job. He tells the girls that he is following her lead. Then we have Carl and Danielle talking, and she says it's good to see him happy and being able to party with everyone. He says he might be interested in doing something with Loverboy, but he's worried about how Lindsay will react. He says he has to think about it so hard when he's going to talk to her and try to plan answers for what she's going to say next or what she's going to say back. Then we have the girls telling Sierra what Wes said to them about them having sex or lack thereof. And Sierra tells the camera that people are so quick to be able to be vulnerable in that way, but won't even tell you their feelings. And she says that that's so backwards to her. She says she's not hopping into bed with anyone unless they can tell her how they feel about her, and that no one is entitled to her body. So I totally feel this 100%. And I know that I am sort of one of few in terms of women, but I cannot be physical with someone if I don't know them. The entire concept of being naked with someone that you don't even know, being naked with someone is literally the most vulnerable you can be. You have nothing on you, right? And think about how self-conscious we are as women, right? But you're willing to take off all your clothes in front of a complete stranger and let them see you at their most vulnerable? Mr. What's your last name? Like, that concept to me is so weird. I literally cannot be physical with someone unless I have strong feelings for them. My body will not allow it. So it is just, I am so with Sierra on this point because I am the exact same way. And I don't think it's too much for her to ask, like, tell me how you feel before we have sex. I think that is very valid. And given that she is super beautiful and a model, she shouldn't have to settle for anything less. She will find someone amazing if Wes is not willing to wait for her. So then this balloon guy, Joe, shows up, and Gabby is interested, but Danielle starts flirting with him. And Lindsay sort of, I don't know if she's, like, bored, or she's used to being the one to, like, hit on guys at these parties. That was, like, sort of her thing, but now she can't anymore. I guess she's sort of just trying to live vicariously, so she kind of gets, like, aggressive with Gabby, and she's like, Gabby, go back in, go swoop him, go do it. And Gabby tells the camera that she's not going to fight with Danielle over a man who blows balloons. And she reminds us that she's been here before with Danielle, but she's afraid of it happening again. So I don't know if you guys remember, but they had both dated the same guy before. And I think he cheated on Gabby with Danielle. Amanda tells Paige what Danielle said at the club about Craig. And she says, like, on paper, like, Paige is saying about herself that she has a job, she has a boyfriend, and Danielle doesn't have either of those things, so she doesn't know why she is telling her what she needs to change in her life. She said she's quick to tell people how they can change, and Paige said that Danielle is foaming at the mouth to talk about Carl and Lindsay, but she can't, so she's going to see who else she can pick apart. And Paige is like, call Lindsay to take her friend back. Amanda and Paige both say that they're kind of seeing where Lindsay was coming from last summer, which is interesting now, right? Because, like, last summer, we were sort of on Danielle's side, right? Where she was sort of getting involved in Carl and Lindsay's relationship, telling them that they were moving too fast and that it was too much. And now when Amanda and Paige are looking at it from a different perspective, like, okay, now she's doing it to me sort of thing. And it's like, hey, wait a minute, butt out. Now they see where Lindsay's coming from. And I totally agree. Now that I see it from that perspective, it is intrusive. It is too much. Anyway. Then we have Lindsay and Carl going for a walk, or sorry, not for a walk, they go to talk, and Carl mentions wanting to be involved in Loverboy and getting more information about that, and Lindsay has a reaction that I didn't expect of her. She actually asks him how he feels about that, and he says that it's something that he wants to look into more, and Lindsay says to him that something that turns her on is when her man is crushing it at life. And then he's like, you don't think I'm crushing life? And she says, no. She says, like, we're walking into a marriage, and if she wants, you know, to end up staying at home with the kids, and she needs to know that she has a partner who is willing to do anything to bring in any sort of income, because that's what she needs for security. She said that even if that means him moving forward with Loverboy, as long as it's a priority for him to make money for their family. Carl tells the camera that it's scary to have a partner who doesn't fully believe in you, and he doesn't know if she does. And I actually think that she approached this very delicately with him. She did it with such understanding and she communicated her needs in this relationship very clearly. Like, usually their communication is, as we've seen, very flawed. It's yelling at each other. And this is her coming at him very calm, cool, collected, and communicating very clearly. She's like, listen, this is what I feel I need for a relationship. And I really don't see his side on this, where he says that he doesn't feel like she's being supportive, because, you know, it really does seem like she is in this sense, because it seems like she's like, you know, even if you want to go do Loverboy, go do that. All I want is for you to have a job and to have that. And that may not be an important thing for everybody, but again, this is something where I sort of fully agree, because, you know, I was in a relationship with someone who wasn't working, and at the time I didn't think it was a big deal. And it sort of went on and on and on, and I was paying for everything and doing everything and taking care of everything while he was out there buying hockey equipment and doing all of this and not contributing whatsoever. And it made me realize, okay, in my next partner, I want someone who is ambitious and who, even if they lost their job, would go work at like McDonald's if they had to support their family. It's really important for me to have someone who is ambitious and who has a very strong work ethic. Those are just things that are important for me. And Lindsay is communicating that those are things that are important for her. She doesn't need to, you know, have a long detailed explanation as to why, but we each have our needs in a relationship and those are hers, right? And I, for the first and only time, will sort of agree with Lindsay on that. That being said, let's move into the Summer House after show because we get a little bit more clarity. So Lindsay said that when she meant that Carl was not crushing it at life, it was more so that he had spent 9 months not doing anything in terms of work. Carl says that he is actually very sensitive about the whole job stuff because I think he was fired twice in two other seasons from other jobs. He said that when he would talk to Lindsay about career opportunities, she would actually shut him down. So he gives an example like with the podcast equipment. He said that she bought that for them to do a couples podcast, but he didn't want to do that. He wanted to work on one on his own. So, you know, she's sort of making it seem like something that it's not, like, oh, I bought this podcast equipment because you said you wanted to do a podcast. Oh, now you don't want to do the podcast. Then the business coach that he got had also given him great ideas, but Lindsay had sort of shut those down as well. Carl said that Lindsay would question his career path, but deep down, he sort of was like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing, right? And he says he knows that she's an influencer like Paige, but he thinks that deep down she wants something more. I don't know. I mean, she hasn't really said anything about that. She said sort of at the beginning of the season that she is an influencer like Paige, but she hasn't really talked about anything that we've seen in terms of career goals for herself, so I'm not sure about that. Wes says that everyone told him that Sierra is very traditional and that but he didn't want to be like pathetic about it. Sierra explains that he's not entitled to have sex with her or her body. And everyone said that it was very harsh for Danielle to say to Paige that she's giving Craig nothing. Danielle explains that it's more that she shoots him down when he wants to be a part of something. Paige said that if Sierra or Amanda had said that to her, she would evaluate it, but Danielle doesn't even know Craig. And she says that when you try and reciprocate that to Danielle, she wants none of it, so it's very one-sided and selfish. Then there's a whole thing about armpits that I'm not going to get into, and then Danielle explains that the two couples in the house made her feel okay about being single, and how the relationship she had with Robert really screwed her up and really rocked her, and how she doesn't feel 100% secure in herself right this second, which is okay, and I feel like it's very mature to know yourself well enough to say that I don't feel 100% secure in myself to move forward in a relationship or whatever else. And that is it for Summer House and the Summer House After Show.
How many sandwiches have you made for me?
Okay, guys, that's the end of the episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you wanted to listen to this episode and other episodes, you can do that on Apple Podcasts, iHeart, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow me on Instagram at The Bravo Investigator and at I Take Bravo Very Seriously. You can follow me on TikTok at I Take Bravo Very Seriously. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel at I Take Bravo Very Seriously. And if you don't mind, please leave me a 5-star review if you like the show. And until next time, keep taking Bravo very seriously.